It's 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. President Donald Trump publicly lectured his fellow NATO leaders Thursday for not paying their fair share for defense.
But 23 of the 28 member nations are still not paying what they should be paying and what they're supposed to be paying for their defense. This is not fair to the people and taxpayers in the United States. And many of these nations owe massive amounts of money from past years and not paying in those past years.
Trump was speaking at a ceremony to unveil a memorial symbolizing the commitment of NATO members to the principle of collective defense, as outlined in Article 5 of the Alliance Treaty. The memorial is a twisted piece of metal from remains of the World Trade Center, a reminder that the only time Article 5 was invoked was after September 11, 2001, in the attacks on the United States. 8 men are now in custody in connection with Monday's suicide bombing at a Manchester, England pop concert, including 2 men who were arrested in separate raids early Thursday. Greater Manchester Police Chief Constable Ian Hopkins said, "These past few days have been intense for the officers and staff, but they continue to make progress in the investigation."
"I want to reassure people that the arrests that we have made are significant, and initial searches of premises have revealed items that we believe are very important to the investigation."
Police have given no information about how the detained men may be connected to the bombing. 22 people died in the suicide bombing. This is VOA. Jared Kushner, U.S. President Donald Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor, is being investigated by the FBI in its probe of possible collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, according to the Washington Post and NBC News. The FBI's focus on Kushner does not necessarily mean he's suspected of a crime, nor is he considered a suspect or subject of the Bureau's wider probe of Russia. Investigators are looking into meetings that Kushner had with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak and a Russian banking executive late last year during the presidential transition, according to the Washington Post. A federal appeals court in Richmond, Virginia, has declined to reinstate President Donald Trump's executive order limiting travel from 6 predominantly Muslim countries for 3 months. VOA's Robert Raphael reports.
The court said in its 205-page ruling the order did amount to a Muslim ban. Laid bare, this executive order is no more than what the president promised before and after his election: naked, invidious discrimination against Muslims. The panel of 13 judges ruling in the case cited Trump's tweets, television interviews, and statements posted on his campaign website as evidence of his intent.
3 judges dissented on the grounds that the executive order did not mention religion. They also criticized the use of campaign material as evidence. The Trump administration's next recourse is to take the case to the Supreme Court. Appeals court documents say the administration has 90 days to file an appeal. One of the plaintiffs in the suit, the International Refugee Assistance Project, vowed to fight as long as it takes. A U.S. congressional candidate in the western U.S. state of Montana has been charged with assault after he allegedly grabbed a reporter by the neck and threw him to the ground. Journalist Ben Jacobs of the British-based newspaper The Guardian tweeted late Wednesday that Republican Greg Gianforte just body slammed me and broke my glasses at the candidate's campaign headquarters just hours before a special election. Gianforte had been favored to win. The Guardian then posted Jacobs' audio recording of the incident.
"The last guy that came in here, you did the same thing. Get the hell out of here. Get the hell out of here. The last guy did the same thing. You were the Guardian?"
"Yes, and you just broke my glasses."
Gianforte's campaign issued a statement accusing Jacobs of aggressive behavior. Big news coming from the U.S. Space Agency. Monstrous cyclones are churning over Jupiter's poles. Until now, a largely unexplored region that is more turbulent than scientists expected. NASA's Juno spacecraft spotted the chaotic weather at the top and bottom of Jupiter once it began skimming the cloud tops last year. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bote in Washington. Today is Friday, May 26th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambian authorities stop South Africa's main opposition leader from entering the country to attend today's trial of Hakainde Hichilema.
Under Zambian law, any pressure mounted on the court constitutes contempt of court. So the Zambian Immigration Authority prevented him from entering Zambia.
Amos Chanda, a spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. The party of Zambian opposition leader Hichilema says his treason trial is drawing international attention because it borders on violation of human rights and signals the rise of dictatorship in Zambia. And Somalia's government vows to defeat al-Shabaab terrorists following Wednesday's deadly bombings.
These are senseless attacks that are aiming and targeting innocent people to just get their cause. But we are very glad that our security forces have all the plans, all the strategies, and it will be a matter of time before we eliminate the threat posed by the terrorist group.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is Somalia's Minister of Information. About 3,000 young African leaders have appealed to 8 African heads of state to end the conflict in South Sudan. And millions of treated mosquito bed nets are set to be distributed across Sierra Leone starting June 1st. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambian authorities on Thursday night prevented the leader of South Africa's main opposition Democratic Alliance Party from entering Zambia to attend today's trial of opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. Mr. Hichilema is on trial for treason for allegedly endangering Zambian President Edgar Lungu's life in April when his motorcade failed to give way to the presidential motorcade. Musi Maimane arrived in Zambia to attend the treason trial when Zambian police boarded the South African Airlines plane and forcefully prevented him from entering. Maimane had criticized the charges against Mr. Hichilema as trumped up. Amos Chanda, spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, says Maimane was denied entry into Zambia because he had previously threatened to pressure Zambian courts and President Lungu to release Mr. Hichilema. Chanda says such threats are contemptible.
Prior to his arrival, he had issued a statement which was carried on the website of the opposition party website that he was coming to Zambia to pressure the court and the Zambian government to release the opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema from prison. Under Zambian law, any pressure mounted on the court constitutes contempt of court. So the Zambian Immigration Authority charged that that kind of posturing and behavior was going to lead to the court, undermine the independence of the judiciary, and cause probably a breakdown of law and order and the rule of law, and therefore it prevented him from entering to commit a crime which he had already professed he would commit. If they did not prevent him from entering Zambia, the prosecution lawyers would have applied for contempt proceedings against him, and the bench warrant would have been issued against him by the magistrate. He would probably have been arrested, but because he's a South African citizen and Zambia and South Africa enjoy exceptionally good relations, the national interest of Zambia and the national interest of Africa were supreme, reign supreme over the narrow political interests of Mr. Maimane.
Amos, a statement by the South African opposition Democratic Alliance said that your government authorities forcefully prevented Mr. Maimane from entering your country. Forcefully. That's the comment.
That's totally untrue and dishonest of Mr. Maimane. He was asked to politely follow the Zambian immigration officials to the VIP, very important person's lounge, where he was interviewed, and he was escorted back to the plane. There was no amount of force used whatsoever. The immigration officials, like in England, like in South Africa, like in the United States, when you arrive at the airport, the immigration official asks you where you're coming from, how many days you are expected to stay. But because these immigration officials had a statement on the official website of Mr. Maimane's party that he was entering the country with a view to apply pressure on the Zambian court. They said that intention is not allowable for any citizen of any other foreign country, because he had professed that he was coming into Zambia to commit a crime. So he was escorted back to the plane and he flew back to South Africa, where he gave a statement that his intention to enter Zambia was to apply pressure on the Zambian court.
Mr. Mamani has described the charges against Mr. Hichilema as trumped-up charges. The fact that he was not allowed people, and the trial starts on today, Friday, yeah. People think that it may not be transparent at all.
Mr. Mamani cannot guarantee the transparency of this judiciary in Zambia. Has been running since 1964 when the British government handed over self-determination to the Zambian government. The Bill of Rights that we have now is the same Bill of Rights that exists in the United Kingdom. That independence cannot be guaranteed by Musi Maimane. He leads a party that is called the Democratic Alliance. It is not a good example of freedom, democracy, rule of law, independence of judiciary. He leads a party of apartheid.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. The party of Zambian opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema says his treason trial is drawing international attention because it borders on violation of human rights and signals the rise of dictatorship in Zambia. This comes as Mr. Hichilema of the opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, goes on trial today, Friday, for treason. Charles Kokoma, spokesman for the UPND, tells VOA's Peter Clotty that the presence of the South African opposition leader at today's trial shows the international community's attention is now being drawn to the political persecution of Hichilema.
The treason charge is getting international attention. At first, maybe the international community thought it was not a serious matter because it didn't look serious anyway. It was just a traffic offense, if any. But for that traffic offense to be converted in treason has shocked many people in the world. And that's why they are getting interest in this matter, because it borders on the violation of human rights, but also a signal that there is a dictatorship creeping up in Zambia, and the rule of law has been sidelined. And the South African opposition leader is not the only one that has condemned this. There are so many other world leaders that have condemned this act.
The EU Parliament unanimously passed a resolution calling on the Zambian government to release Hakainde Hichilema, leader of the UPND. However, officials of the government are saying this is a domestic internal matter that does not entertain foreign interference. What is your reaction to that?
Well, the Zambian government cannot hide under the curtain of sovereignty, because this is an issue that is bordering on the violation of human rights. And human rights are a concern for the whole world. It can't be just confined to one country to sort out. So I think the Zambian government does not have a good argument in this respect.
The treason trial is serious enough. It's an unbailable offense. So Hakainde Hichilema still remains behind bars. The police have refused allegations that he's been mistreated and all that. What is next for him?
Well, what is important is that international human rights organizations, including Amnesty International, have expressed concern over that. And international human rights organizations have been to Zambian prisons before, and the Zambian prisons are not the best that any human being can stay. Because even Mr. Maimane, the opposition South African leader, was initially denied the permission to visit Hakainde Hichilema in prison.
President Lungu himself has said he will allow the legal process to go because it will be transparent enough. If Hakainde Hichilema is found not guilty, he will be released. Do you share any stance?
No, because this is a political case. And it's a political case that was started by the ruling party itself. They were agitating for the arrest of the opposition leader, even before he was arrested. So they have something to do with the arrest of Mr. Hichilema. It is not that he just committed an offense and they arrested him. It was politically motivated. So when a case is politically motivated, it is the politicians themselves, including the head of state, who should stop this thing going ahead.
Charles Kakoma is the spokesman for Zambia's main opposition, United Party for National Development. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clotte from the capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, May 26. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. Somalia's government is vowing to defeat al-Shabaab terrorists following Wednesday's deadly bombings in the capital, Mogadishu, which killed 5 civilians and injured 6 others. Al-Shabaab has been carrying out almost weekly bombings since March this year. Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is Somalia's Minister of Information.
With regards to the car exploded on Wednesday evening, we have the information so far. 4 people or innocent people have been killed, while 10 others were injured. Yesterday, on Thursday, the police have published the video, CCTV footage, when the car was exploded near the seaport of Mogadishu. The police have been chasing this car for some time, and it is believed that the terrorist group, they were trying to have an impact or explode with a car with one of the exams of the high school students, but luckily they did not reach the intended aim of trying to kill more students. But we are very fortunate that that did not happen.
Mr. Minister, it seems that almost every other week or two since March, the frequency of bombings in your country has been increasing. What does this say about security in Somalia or Mogadishu?
What does this say is that al-Shabaab, the terrorist group who are linked with al-Qaeda, are trying to show their presence in the country and sending a message to al-Qaeda, and they are very much aware that the government has the plans and the strategies to combat against them. So that's why they are trying to increase. But we are very glad that our security forces have all the plans, all the strategies, and it will be a matter of time before we eliminate the threat posed by the terrorist group. And as you know, this is a global threat, not only to Somalia, but throughout the world. We have seen what is happening with other countries. So these are senseless attacks that are aiming and targeting innocent people to just get their cause. But I'm very committed and determined that the government will do all its power to eliminate these threats.
U.S. President Donald Trump has declared parts of your country as an area of active hostilities, which means the U.S. military has authority to conduct expanded military activities in your country. Does this help or does this hurt the fight against al-Shabaab?
Most definitely. The support from our allies and friends, it will definitely help us to contain or to defeat terrorist group in our soil. They know too well that we are after them. They know too well Ramadan is approaching fast. They know too well that they cannot get the frequency of support that they used to get from al-Qaeda. So they are trying to live without water. So it will be a matter of time before they will be eliminated from our country.
Abdi Rahman Omar Osman is Somalia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Mogadishu. About 3,000 young African leaders have written an appeal to 8 African heads of state to end the conflict in South Sudan. The Archbishop Tutu Fellows say the South Sudan conflict poses serious national security threats to neighboring countries. The Chief Executive Officer of the African Leadership Institute, Jackie Chimhanzi, says the South Sudan conflict has now become what she calls an African problem.
Part of the Africa that we want is an Africa that is at peace with itself. So we felt that we needed to compel our leaders to act because we can't talk about a peaceful Africa in 2063, yet we are not acting on South Sudan now, today.
Your letter is addressed to around 8 African leaders. But looking at the leaders here, you have Uganda, Sudan, Kenya, Ethiopia, and Egypt. Yes. These are all countries that have vested interest in South Sudan. How do you ask them to do what you want them to do when they have vested interest in this country?
but especially because they've got vested interests. Do you not act when your interests are at stake? So I think we're asking them that you are neighboring countries and the atrocities and the war, actually those things threaten to spill over into neighboring countries.
Kenya, Ethiopia have been working with South Sudanese leaders for quite a long time, and experts in the region have pointed fingers at these two countries that they are not there for peace. They are there for their own economic interest. How do you talk to people who are mining different business in South Sudan as opposed to ending the conflict?
We are reading in the press now that a number of Kenyan banks in South Sudan have had to shut down their branches. A number of Kenyan banks in South Sudan are losing revenue, you know. So it is in their interest act, definitely.
Your letter also talks about denying South Sudanese leaders access to countries and amenities and assets that they enjoy in these countries. How is that going to be possible? Because how do you deny your friend from accessing your home?
Maybe just to give some context. So we are Archbishop Tutu Leadership Fellows. So we see ourselves as the next generation of African leaders. So we are today's young leaders. And one of the things we're saying is that it's not right for our current leaders to continue not to hold each other to account. It's not right for current leaders to continue to support behaviors that they know are not correct. I think we're saying that, you know, it is time to be honest and to call out and to speak truth to power, because this process of supporting such behaviors is really not progressing the continent. The longer you continue protecting each other, the more the situation gets out of hand, and then the likelihood is high that the situation will then spill over, not just into neighboring countries, but it will become an African-wide problem eventually.
Talking about Africa, there's the notion of African solutions to African problems. Has it ever worked anywhere on the continent?
No, and I think that's what we're saying as young leaders. We want to see you talk the walk, you know, so walk the talk. You cannot continue to say African solutions for African problems, yet you are looking at this problem. You are looking at this atrocity. We are watching 3.9 people being killed. 4.9 people are food insecure right now. There's famine. There's conflict. Women and children are being raped. It cannot be right.
Jackie Chimhansi is the Chief Executive Officer for the African Leadership Institute in South Africa. She was speaking with John Tansel, viewing South Sudan in Focus program. Millions of treated mosquito bed nets are set to be distributed around Sierra Leone starting June 1st this year. More than 25% of the population of Sierra Leone is infected with malaria at any one time, according to the World Health Organization. The country's health ministry said they hope that Sierra Leone can have universal bed net coverage by July of this year to decrease malaria cases. The World Health Organization's country representative in Sierra Leone, Dr. Anders Nordstrom, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the bed net distribution and other efforts to combat malaria in Sierra Leone.
There will be 4.3 million bed nets distributed now, and the campaign and the distribution of this will start. We have the launch on Thursday, the 1st of June. And then you should just, for the figures, know that Sierra Leone has got 7 million people. The main target here is both distribute the net, but then, of course, even more important, to ensure that women and children are really using the net.
There has been talk recently of a malaria vaccine going on trial in certain countries. Is it possible for Sierra Leone to be part of the trial?
It might be possible for Sierra Leone to be part of the vaccine trial, but it's very, very early days in terms of the malaria vaccine. And also, the initial results of the malaria vaccine showed some results, but it has quite a low level of protection. If I remember right, I think it's only 30%. So malaria vaccines will not be the magic bullet. It won't give 100% protection, so you will not be able to deal with the malaria situation. And in Sierra Leone, is one of the most affected countries in the world when it comes to malaria. Just to give you some figures here, that 4 out of 10, 40% of children under 5 are positive for malaria. We believe that 20% of the under 5 mortality in the country is because of malaria. So more than 5,000 children dying every year because of malaria. There have been some progress during the last year, but the burden of disease in Sierra Leone for malaria is enormous. But even if there will be a vaccine, and if one would just go for the vaccine that is available now, one would still definitely need to work on the present strategy. Present strategy to reduce the deaths and illness in terms of because of malaria. It's about making sure people get the proper treatment, and it's about spraying against mosquitoes. The three strong strategy that is in place right now that has been very successful in many parts of the world. So it might be of interest, but it's not going to be the magic bullet, at least not what we see right now.
How does malaria affect Sierra Leone each year?
It has an effect on Sierra Leone, both what I said in terms of mortality, meaning people actually dying. So we estimate that 20% of child mortality is because of malaria. Sierra Leone has the world's fourth highest child mortality rate in the world today. Sierra Leone has the highest maternal mortality rate in the world, and malaria is also a major contributing factor to maternal mortality in the world.
Dr. Anders Nordstrom is the World Health Organization representative in Sierra Leone. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Freetown. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the remarkable comeback of Zambia at the ongoing Swan FIFA Under 20 World Cup in Japan, where the young Chipolopolo of Zambia beat Iran 4-2 in a Group C game on Thursday. President Edgar Lungu of Zambia has praised the young Chipolopolo for his spirited comeback that erased a 2-0 deficit to emerge 4-2 winners over Iran. The African champions will now top Group C after Costa Rica and Portugal settled for a draw. In Group F, Senegal's quest for a place in the second round took a knock on Thursday when they lost 1-0 to the USA in their Group F clash in Incheon. The win moves the USA team to the top of the pool with 4 points, one ahead of Senegal and Saudi Arabia, who have 3 each. Ecuador are bottom with a single point. The final matches in the pool will be played on Sunday when Senegal take on Ecuador and the USA face off against the Saudis. South Africa, on the other hand, has suffered 2 defeats out of 2 matches, which sees them stuck at the bottom of Group D with no point at all. Nothing but a win will suffice for South Africa when they face Group D leaders Uruguay on Saturday. Japan had earlier defeated the Amajita of South Africa 2-1. In the African Cup of Nations Under 17 competition currently holding in Gabon, holders Mali will play Ghana in the final of the Under 17 African Cup of Nations on Sunday. Both finalists secured victory through penalty kicks after stalemates during regulation time. Fabien is Ghana under 17 coach.
It was a very, very, very good game, very tactical. And I must say that I really enjoyed it. And congratulations to Niger for giving us a very, very good match.
And to Nigeria, where the Nigerian Football Federation has announced that Elderson Echejile will captain the Super Eagles in their international friendly later tonight against Corsica in the absence of skipper John Obi Mikel. Elderson Echejile, who had his Super Eagles debut 8 years ago, is the most experienced player in the squad.
We are on the right track. We missed 2 major tournaments. And we started the World Cup campaign, and the first 2 games we've won it. We have new young players in the team.
And new South African coach Stuart Baxter has named a 25-man squad for a 2019 African Cup of Nations Match Day 1 qualifier in Nigeria on June the 10th. Baxter, who retained most of the players he inherited, believes he has the players to succeed.
A lot of intelligence on Nigeria. I've got the Manchester United scout. He's helping us. In Paris, they're playing against Corsica. I've got video footage, I've got the reports, I've got the coach's background. So by the time we come to the event, then we will be quite well prepared.
And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, May 26th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again on Monday morning for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at the life and journey of Mzee Boniface Byanyima, arguably one of Africa's most unique and remarkable teachers. The political icon died on May 16th at age 97. A discussion on Uganda's political giant. That's right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.